What does Korean kaiju, childhood toys, and adult alcoholism have to do with one another? Why, they are but three ingredients in this interesting recipe for a wholly unique film. Will this film live up to the festival buzz it created? Or does it not hold up nearly a decade later? That's what we intend to suss out this week. This is Kaiju vs. History, Colossal. Welcome back to Kaiju versus History. This is your towny bartender, Patrick, and joining me is the most tender barfly in town, Miles.
Oh, howdy, howdy, howdy.
Hello. A lot of this movie centered around the bar, like opening
about
up more
bar,
parts of the bar.
In the bar.
Yeah, I mean, I understand what the movie is about, but it is funny.
I mean, it's so interesting because, I mean, and we'll get into it, but this movie like flies so close to like really being considered kaiju adjacent for many reasons.
I don't think so. I think it's pretty much a kaiju movie in American terms.
I disagree, but we'll get into it. I mean, obviously there's a kaiju in it that, I mean, that's not disputable, but I don't necessarily know if that makes it a kaiju film. And I think that's what I want to talk about. I feel like this thing is something else, which is something that came to me when I was thinking about how I felt about this movie, because we're talking about Colossal. It's a 2016 science fiction black comedy film. And that last part is something that the marketing at the time did not really disclose.
I remember the trailer really pushing the comedy aspect of it.
Oh, yeah. It was how fun. She's controlling the cut. That is the trailers. Like,
Anne Hathaway she can't get her life together. You know,
yeah, she's like a chronically depressing alcoholic mess.
Yeah. Well, but it's like they play it off for laughs, I think, in the trailer. It's like
in the trailer. And then you're like, oh, no, this person's.
But little
like,
did she know she was about to have a whole colossal amount of trouble.
But before we get into this picture, Patrick, tell us what's in a title.
This picture. I actually do like the title. It does evoke the kaiju aspect of the film. Of course, Colossal being in another film name on our list, Amazing Colossal Man, an American giant person movie. But yeah, both the tone and subject matter, the word also makes me think of how really the only time we use it in English parlance is like as it's an adverb, like what a colossal waste of time, or an adjective.
You know, right,
it's an adverb, right? It's like affecting another word.
Yeah, I mean, because
such a colossal
the waste
jerk
is the colossal.
Yeah, you're being a colossal buzzkill, or you know, something like that.
Right, right, right.
Very little where we like, oh my gosh, look at that building, it's colossal. Like that is like the least that we use it as. I feel like probably the first definition in, you know, the dictionary, but. Yeah, I didn't really get that in my first watch through of it, but I don't think they say the word in the movie, which I feel like would have been funny. But
yeah, I mean, that's when you have a word like this, I'm always waiting for it. I'm always waiting so I can be like, ha ha.
They said the thing.
You know, it sometimes it works. Sometimes it's not like they're going to say she is the girl with the dragon tattoo.
Well, speaking of gendered titles, the film does have various titles around the world, because I don't know if Colossal quite would translate as well and have kind of the same double meaning as it does here. Not that that's necessarily what they're going for. I think that's just my interpretation. But in Estonia, it was Girl and Monster. In Mexico, Ella es un monstruo. She's a monster, which not really. Like, there's a whole other character that's a monster in this movie more than anything. My girlfriend is a monster in Russia, which also doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, whose girlfriend is it? Like, from I was about to say, is it from like this side character, Dan Stevens' character's point of view?
No. It's Joel, because Dan Stevens plays the ex-boyfriend.
Yeah, well, he's Joel. I had to look who that was. He's barely in this movie.
I know, but he's the only one that has like a actual relationship with her in this movie.
Barely.
Yes, absolutely.
Slovenia, it translated out to giantess, which is more kind of a gender term. But the translation for the title in Japan comes out to synchronized monster. So, you know, but the main thing that you see in the trailer is her scratching the head, the monster scratching her head, and like her doing the dance and the monster doing the dance. And, you know, it's a good title for, I think, the major question. I think the mystery of this movie that the trailer was putting out there. It's like, what is happening? How is she controlling this kaiju? And yeah, I agree with you. I was definitely led into this film thinking it was going to be like a weird sci-fi kaiju fun comedy. Anne Hathaway having a good time. Well, yeah.
And this movie also makes you hate like Jason Sudeikis, which I love Jason Sudeikis. I never want to hate Jason Sudeikis. And boy, howdy, does this prove that he's a solid actor, because it really makes you hate him.
Yeah. So, I mean, we can get right into talking about, I mean, I don't know if we have to dive deep into the movie, but let's talk about these actors, because that is like the first thing that was secured in the production of the film was Anne Hathaway was actually searching for a film that she describes as, you know, kind of like being John Malkovich, something of that caliber. She was inspired to search for a script like this after watching Ben Wheatley's A Field in England, which is a very trippy kind of hallucination. It's black and white.
He's had a wild
career
too.
It's a crazy movie.
We'll talk about him too.
But yeah, and then she just put that out into the universe, i.e. she told her agents, you know, she wanted to look at scripts like that. And Colossal, a script that I believe was also written by the director Nacho Vigalondo, the director behind Time Crimes, I believe,
is the
translation. And
yeah, Time Crimes, and he also did Open Windows, both which are really good.
You know, I'm not really heard of Open Windows. I knew of his Spanish language films.
It's a screen techno thriller. Like you're mm-hmm. It's not found footage, but you're from the perspective of a laptop. It's got Elijah Wood and Sasha Gray, and it's really, really solid. I feel like it was a screen, it is. But it was just a really good thriller, and it mm-hmm. kind of got overlooked back when it came out. But I really liked it because I, you know, liked everyone involved.
Yeah. So Anne Hathaway signed on, and then with her comes her production company. She was actually a producer on this film. And then, you know, immediately a ton of money was infused into this project, and they started looking for the other main actors in the film. And very interestingly enough, came across, I would say, Jason Sudeikis, who really was just known for straight comedy at this point. He'd done Horrible Bosses, and of course, he was still on SNL,
He was doing a lot of things with a bunch of his friends. He had a handful of movies that
were not straight comedy.
I mean, they were still, this is actually after Colossal, never mind. I don't know, it's the year before Colossal. He did the Sleeping with Other People with Alison Brie, which is a romantic comedy, but it's a little more off-kilter. It's not the kind of movies that he was making with all of his SNL friends, like Semi-Pro or Horrible Bosses or We're the Millers, stuff like that. It's a little more like kind of indie film like this.
I would say for both him and Anne Hathaway, this is kind of a departure from, I think, the kind of characters and kind of movies that they had done. Yeah.
Anne Hathaway had already done Batman and stuff. And she's done a lot of like Ella Enchanted, Princess Diaries. Like she's done a wide variety of things.
Had she already won the Oscar at this point for Les Mis? I don't remember when that movie came out.
Do not remember when she won the Oscar. I don't remember. I think Les Mis would have been.
Oh, yeah, it was before. It was 2014.
14.
No, 2012. So she probably won.
Oh, same year as Batman.
Wow, what a big year for Anne Hathaway.
So yeah, no kidding.
This is a few years after that when production started on this film. And yeah, so her signing up, the director, Nacho, as everyone called him on set, did not expect, I think, to have such a high profile cast for this film.
Yeah, I mean, you got three people. I mean, Dan Stevens is completely underutilized in this one, but we also did not understand like the greatness of Dan Stevens at this time. Actually, no, we did, because he had done The Guest, and The Guest is amazing.
Yeah, mostly known for Nabby.
And I haven't seen his Night at the Museum sequel movie, but yeah, The Guest is incredible. Everyone should go see The Guest.
I mean, he has since gone on to do some amazing stuff, including we're going to see him in another kaiju movie.
We're going to be talking about Dan Stevens a couple more times. and as you mentioned earlier, I was talking over you by accident. Ben Wheatley is going to be on this podcast down the line as well, because he directed The Meg 2.
Did he?
Yes, he did. Same Ben Wheatley. Everyone was like, wait, he's doing what?
Why?
Probably because he's like, you know what? I'm going to make my ducats, and then I'm going to go back to making really weird films that like 12 people see. Because
that's so good.
He has an incredible filmography, and then he's got The Meg 2.
When they were selling this movie, they described it to producers and studios and actors as Godzilla meets Lost in Translation, which
I wish that's what it was.
Really, really leading people astray. It's like, sure, you could say Godzilla, but this prompted actually a lawsuit from Toho, the extremely litigious Toho, they were sending out kind of press materials with Godzilla
on it,
which in them, and you know, calling it basically a American Godzilla like movie. And the complaint filed said, quote, these filmmakers, quote, were brazenly producing, advertising, and selling an unauthorized Godzilla film of their own. This is very much not a film, but
no, but the thing is, they were advertising that. I actually I don't often agree with some of their lawsuits, but this one I am actually on board with. I do think it's warranted. I think they were trying to use the Godzilla brand to get a leg up to their film.
Yeah,
and it caused them to move, because they were going to put the movie in Tokyo with a lizard like creature. And that's what prompted them to move it to Seoul, South Korea, with a very different design. And actually, I think that's for the best.
Yeah, I think that was the initial idea. I don't know if they had gone into like pre-production, if like Tokyo was like definite. But people think that, you know, all the terms of their agreement, because it never went to court. They just kind of agreed outside of court. Likely was this monster can't be attacking Tokyo, which is fine. Seoul, you know, as the centerpiece of the other side of the world, is as interesting, I think, as Tokyo.
100%. We've seen Tokyo
destroyed a lot. And so that got cleared up, and the movie went forward. One of the interesting things looking into this film, and now that we're in like the modern age, you know, within a decade of movies coming out from when we're recording this, websites for these films are finally still up. We don't have to go to like the Wayback Machine. I think Colossal's website is still up somewhere. And one of the things they had was a contest for the movie to take a photo with a finger puppet monster in the weirdest, wildest, and coolest location, and hashtag it with "She is Colossal" for a trip to win tickets to Austin, Texas for a film premiere.
Austin, so, Massachusetts?
Texas, Austin.
No, it's a dumb reference to Road Trip with Tom Green. It's a joke that he makes in that movie, and I have made that joke since 1999. Like, it's never unfunny to me.
It's been a while since I've seen that. Monsters in this movie, they really just call it the monster and the robot in the film, I thought looked pretty good. I was a fan of kind of like the weird, lanky design from the trailer. I was like, oh, let's see where they go with this. Because it kind of looked like Anne Hathaway, you know, like build-wise. It didn't look like a giant, bulky monster.
I like the monster design. It still feels very Western for some reason. Like you can tell the same country that made Colossal also designed like Clover, you know?
Mm-hmm. I feel you.
We don't we don't tend to do these things that tend to have a ton of personality oozing out of them, except this one does have some personality. And I like the way the robot looks. I thought the robot was pretty neat.
Robot, you know, there's not anything super unique about it. It was like a giant. It didn't look, I guess, to be fair, like a mech in like someone was inside that. It does look like a living, like C-3PO style, like robot, if that makes sense. And that's kind of what it is, because it's just like a toy that is enlarged into like imagination size. They did not use mocap for the monster, which I think is very interesting because of all the one-to-one movements. Supposedly they just shot Anne Hathaway acting out those parts and then gave it to the CG team to kind of recreate it, which, yeah, it's definitely the cheaper way to do it. It's one of the things the director said is this in his marketing material was this is going to be the cheapest Godzilla movie ever made. And does he not understand how cheap Godzilla movies were?
There is that, but that is something that one highlights a problem that I have with this movie. I don't think this movie comes from any place of love for kaiju cinema. I think it comes from, oh, this is kind of a kooky. Oh, what if we did that? Ha ha. You know, it's more of a goof on it. That's not really, not really made with love. I think I don't like, it's not a love letter to the kaiju genre. I think it's using the kaiju genre in a way of like, oh, we're going to take something that you think is silly and we're going to like make a dark movie out of it. Mm-hmm. I don't really think that, like, it's not that I think Nacho like hates kaiju movies or doesn't respect Godzilla or whatever, but the actions that I have seen historically from the stuff from this movie is that, you know, it just kind of seems like it's more carelessly thought of than anything else. And that's one thing that I feel comes out in this movie and what really bugs me about it.
I will say the bait and switch, I think, is what probably caused audiences to have kind of a negative reaction to this movie, because I feel like, first of all, at this point, Anne Hathaway and Jason Sudeikis are primarily, I mean, outside of her dramatic work, known as more bubbly, you know, like romantic lead kind of characters or comedic characters. Anne Hathaway, her, you know,
she's got such a wild filmography.
She does, but you know her. I think people mostly know her from like the Princess Diary movies and
they're very big. But, I mean, you forget, remember like the big thing she's been part of. Like, yeah, she was in the Princess Diaries and Devil Wears Prada, which is probably her like big solo hit. But she was also like in Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah. I mean, she's done a ton of films, and you know, she's also played a kind of a similar character in Rachel Getting Married, which got her some early kind of, you know, critical acclaim for her acting skills. And of course, we already mentioned Dark Knight Rises. She's Catwoman in that. So
I don't love the movie, but I do love her as the White Queen in Alice in Wonderland. I think she ate that role up. She is beautifully creepy in that movie. I love that because like she's supposed to be like this harbinger of good, like the white side of things. And she is like, oh, no, she's just as messed up. And it's a fantastic performance in a movie I don't really care for.
Yeah. Excuse me. So you have this huge cast that are kind of playing a little against type, and audiences were a little tricked with some of the trailers. This would be more of a romp. And I would say the first 40 minutes of the movie are pretty fun. They're a little like, oh, she's got problems with alcohol and she's moving back to her small town. And all the characters you meet up until that point are pretty neutral, I would say, at the very least. And then about halfway through the movie, Jason Sudeikis, this character who hadn't really shown like this evil side of him, turns into a complete terror.
You get glimpses that it's possible, but it's still very hidden. Mm-hmm. It comes out as soon as he puts together that she is into his friend. And then it turns real dark real quick. And it's when you start to analyze, well, first of all, like every single relationship she has with the men in her life, for the most part, is in somewhat of a controlling or abusive situation. Because even Dan Stevens' character, Tim, like, even though he's justified in being frustrated with her, the way he tries to control her in general still feels very chauvinistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, like I said, even though there is justifiable reasons for like wanting her to get her act together, like there are healthy ways to go about it. And I think that she doesn't have any healthy relationships, you know, entering this film and even during mm-hmm. this film, because, you know, working at the bar, even though she starts to like try to put herself into like, I'm not going to drink, you know, and I haven't been drinking. I'm slowly kind of getting my stuff together. But yeah, then this dark turn happens. And, you know, it's tough because like on one hand, I think that both actors deliver excellent performances. Like Jason Sudeikis is chilling and psychotic.
I mean, he's so good, but, you know, I had completely forgotten like whole monologues he had in this movie. And I feel like they, with other actors, probably would have been really centerpieces of the film. Like I had forgotten the fireworks scene completely. I was like, where is this coming from? I'd forgotten all about that. I remember him being like evil, controlling and manipulative, but this watch through, I kind of keyed into more, you know, he's just so widely and colorfully drawn. He doesn't even seem like an actual human being. He seems more like a representation of her problems. Yes, you know,
100%. And
which the kaiju themselves are as well in a lot of ways, you know, like how we can like project
how he's not a human being, he's just a robot. He like he's just a thing for her to overcome.
Well, and also her main guilt and fear is that she's going to turn into this monster again and hurt or kill more people in Seoul. Which leads, you know, her to, as the kaiju in the film, try to go through the process of like explaining to people, like, I'm sorry, it was a mistake, it's never gonna happen again. Those are very much like AA kind of words.
Yeah, and I liked that scene a lot. I think one of my things about this movie, and one, I wish we had more of the kaiju stuff. We get the explanation, sort of, like, it's still kind of magic. Thing.
Yeah, it is magic. It's a magical realism film. Like, believe it or not, the thing that's most unbelievable to me, Miles, is that she's walking around with, like, a lizard man toy in her backpack, and he's got, like, just some generic robot in his backpack. And it's like,
It
would have been more realistic if one of them had both toys, but it shows very specifically one falling out of her bag and one falling out of his bag and being struck by magical lightning. Which...
And they don't explain that, like, so we get this idea that that her and Jason Sudeikis have been like, they were like formerly kind of BFFs to a degree, because they have all these memories. They have been in each other's lives at least, but Gloria, Anne Hathaway's character, like they both are taking like their, I guess, some sort of dioramas to class. And she looks to have like Korea.
She has Seoul, Korea. Yeah.
And the wind carries it off. And Jason Sudeikis's character is like, oh, I'll help you get it. And we see from the very beginning, he's a psychopath, because instead of getting it, he just stomps on her diorama.
Yes. Which maybe she had repressed about that day.
Maybe, but like, here's the thing is like, she was friends with him for years afterwards, and we see like the bleeding down her forehead, the lightning in the sky.
Yeah,
and this is the first time the monster appears, and she's like giving him the Damien eyes. So I'm like, well, why are they friends years later? And like all this time they spent together and are waxing poetic about the good times they had as kids. It doesn't make any sense to me.
So like a lot of things, you just kind of, I mean, they were like kind of pushing that she was only able to access maybe memories of what happened that day through dreams. Like she's having nightmares of like the lightning, or she's like seeing herself walking to school as a child, which I really enjoyed. I don't think I noticed it the first time, that the first time she walks across the park, there's also like kids walking to school like at the exact same time. That's another thing that's never explained, is like why the time is important.
It's 8:05. Yeah.
Yeah. Is this that, like, what kind of gremlin style logic do we have to play here? Like, how long does this window last? They never like explain. Is it like 8:05 to 9:05 or like how
yeah, long they don't really give you anything to chew on with the little playground area. And yeah, there's a lot where it's just like,
and then when like missiles are being fired at the kaiju and they can feel it, it's like, well, what are you feeling and why? You know, like it's not important. It's just like a fun thing that happened, but it's like it's in the movie and it's part of this weird lore, you know. But yeah, it goes towards the ending of the film, which I still don't quite understand, Miles, that she flies to Seoul,
to Korea,
to Korea, where the kaiju is. And when she goes there, the kaiju appears at the playground in whatever state this.
So
where does this take place? New Hampshire.
I know she left New York, but I don't know if this is like upstate New York or.
It says Maynhead, New Hampshire on the.
Oh, New Hampshire. OK, so not too far away.
Wikipedia.
So this makes sense to me because we know at 8:05 they can run rampant around a section of Seoul. So what she does is she finds out the exact location that the creature is and flies there so that at 8:05 their time a.m., the creature will not appear in Seoul, but in New Hampshire. And she can basically just yeet Jason Sudeikis out of existence, well, which just, she does.
But like, how does she know that that would work? It is such like a wild.
I
don't
think she knew it would work. I just think she believed it would.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like the ending of this movie is, if you look at it on a literal face value, it's like, what the heck, you know? But if you're looking at like her personification of her alcoholism is Jason Sudeikis, is this monster that she kind of helped create in some ways. If you take it like that, her flinging him like into the sun at the end of the movie is, you know, pretty awesome.
It's yeah, a no, horrific, it's
if it's just like a feel, human being,
yeah, you're definitely rooting for her in that situation, and everyone's cheering for her, or everyone's cheering for the robot getting yeeted. They don't see her do it, obviously. Yeah. Although, I mean, I feel like, you know, if everyone's running away and the one singular white girl is standing in place while something else is happening, I'm putting two and two together. Something's up there.
What doesn't? She's not trying to hide it because she goes into a bar immediately and is like, "Let me tell you this whole story."
Well, that's the weird thing is like you think that she's had all this growth and then like she's like, "Oh, do you want a drink?" And then she gives this like this hilarious like Anne Hathaway like sigh, which is like,
"Oh,
her facial expressions are always priceless. Always have been." Like the way that she can emote with her face has always been one of her strongest features. And she gives us this hilarious, like final, like, "Oh yeah, I can't be doing that." But it still kind of undercuts all the stuff that she's been doing. Well, and it goes ends for the movie on like, such a weird note.
It goes for a comedic ending and not a dark comedic ending, which movie is. So it definitely kind of,
yeah, it feels weird. I mean, this movie is very tonally inconsistent. I will posit this because most of the kaiju stuff happens in newsreels and, you know, a handful of sequences when they're figuring out that they can, like what you saw in the trailer, that they can actually control these beasts. I will posit that instead of being a kaiju film and more of a kaiju adjacent film, this is instead a dark, twisted Hallmark movie. Big city girl goes back to small town. Starts to fall in love with a local bartender, just kind of keep things together. They start kind of hanging out and they're building the place back up. It's like all the trademarks of a Hallmark movie.
Well, one plot point of twisted. Like, "Oh, your father had the old Western part of the bar. Why don't you reopen?" That is definitely Hallmark movie plot point.
There's so much Hallmark stuff this is really cool that it's twisting it so much, but the kaiju stuff being the selling point, I just don't think it gets explored enough in this
movie. I will say one of the things I loved kaiju related in this film is something we don't see in almost any kaiju movie, which is like people's kind of like real life reactions to like, "Oh my gosh, there are giant monsters in the world." Like, everyone goes to the bar to watch TV like 24/7 and like,
oh yeah,
they're talking about it all the time and talking about like theories and stuff. And that I thought was really cool. Like when the monster first attacks and she's woken up by the phone call and looks online, like her reactions are exactly what mine would be, like, no way. And like, you know, that part's all great. And yeah, the fact that it kind of like takes over, like, you know, the news 100%. And there's just like some throwaway lines, like the United Nations has like ceased all like military action or something to focus on the Korean threat. And it's like, oh yeah, you know, they hopefully would if there's like a giant kaiju attack.
I think because of its tonal shift, like I wrote a note that when the movie started, where the vibes felt very Ghostbusters to me, of the girl seeing the monster and screaming and that transitioning into the title sequence. And I was like, it should have transitioned into like a badass song that, like, you know, like Ghostbusters does, like that. The vibe was just so that, which is the movie I thought I was getting.
Well, a lot of people thought they were getting a different movie. This film cost $15 million to make, which I wonder how much of that was for the talent. It earned a fifth of that, maybe, or a third of that, a $4.5 million international take, which is not good.
No, good at all. Big bomb.
Critics enjoyed it, though. It has an 81% on Rotten Tomatoes, but the audience score is much lower. It's like 60% or something along those lines, 50 to 60%.
Still pretty decent.
But yeah, like I said, critics really did enjoy it. It was getting pretty positive reviews, and part of that is I think Anne Hathaway and Jason Sudeikis really do carry this movie. But the more I watch it, the more I dislike just how intense it gets with his and her relationship. And like,
yes,
you know, she, I suppose at the end of the movie, flies to Seoul to like commit to killing him in some ways. It's like there's so much easier ways to do that, you know, like
just
run him over with a car.
Oh, I mean, it may have been easier. Maybe it might have been as satisfying.
For sure.
I mean, I also wonder where she's getting this money for this ticket.
You know, that's one thing people complain about online. It's like, I, you know, credit cards exist, people. Like, you don't have to like worry about.
Yeah, she just doesn't seem like someone who would actually have a credit card that has anything on it.
Well, yeah, there are some complaints online as well that maybe this was like a inconsistency on IMDb. It's like there's water in her pool at her family house that's been abandoned for years, and it's like, who cares? It's a movie. You
know? But it's one of those things where, like, I don't know. Especially when you start to distance yourself from a movie, you start seeing the issues that you have with it. And that's the one thing that's kind of a bummer about this one, just because, like, you know, I do think if they had made a bit more of an honest marketing campaign with this one, I feel like people would probably sidle up to it, because it's certainly not a bad movie, but it definitely has some issues. Did you have a favorite part before we get into our ratings? Other than Jason Sudeikis getting yeeted out of existence.
I mean, I think any scene at the playground, which really should have been the focus of the film, is like, you mean,
yeah, exactly.
The logistics. Well, not just the logistics of it. The first time, like, he really beats her up and is like, this is what's going to happen every time you don't do what I say. And he's
so rough.
He starts like smashing the ground with his boots, and then you just hear like screaming and like destruction that's happening in Seoul. Stuff like that is amazing. And that's like what is in the director Nacho's vision board, I'm sure, is stuff like that. And then it gets really bogged down with other scenes elsewhere in the movie. But I feel like the main premise of this movie probably could have been done in like a 45-minute Twilight Zone style episode. And they
fully agreed,
stretched out kind of characters and plots to almost 2 hours, right? What was the final runtime? It's like 1 hour 45.
Yeah, it's roughly around there as far as like actual like movie time. I'm not sure, but yeah, it's an hour and or 110 minutes. So yeah, about 1 hour 50.
Yeah, so not accounting for the credits,
right?
A little close to that. I'll tell you what I do love about this movie, Miles. We got a soundtrack by a composer we're going to hear in a couple years on the Godzilla mm-hmm. King of the Monsters soundtrack. The soundtrack for this movie is done by Bear McCreary, who at this point, 2016, was mostly known for, I think, television scores. He had done the Battlestar Galactica reboot. He did the Walking Dead series. But yeah. we'll do more movies after this. And like I said, including one of my favorites in Godzilla King of the Monsters. And it sounds great.
Oh, yeah. No, his. Yeah, we'll talk about that. Yeah, Bear McCreary is great. I love his stuff. And yes, his work on this one was very, very solid. It is. I wish everything else about this kind of matched up with that. But yeah, this is one of the stronger scores that we've had in the show in a while.
Yeah. Did you have any favorite aspects of the film? Something you want to highlight?
Yeah. I mean, basically anything involving the kaiju stuff is pretty great. I honestly really loved Anne Hathaway's performance. I thought she was tremendous. Like
they gave her massive part. I was going to say they gave her massive bangs in this movie and it really changed her whole look.
It worked for her. I love me some Anne Hathaway. The kaiju stuff, especially when the robot and monster are fighting, is probably some of the stronger stuff in the movie. But then you get the really dark stuff that takes place outside of the city, which kind of cuts that a little bit. That probably would have been it. I do like that opening. I think that Ghostbusters opening is great.
Well, let's get to rating this film. Yep. This is definitely an oddity. And I will say the first time you watch this movie, it is jarring. And it is one that you probably will enjoy more on the second time, which is odd because so much of it is like a surprise factor. But yeah, first time watching a movie is very good. I enjoyed this rewatch too, but in a different way. I feel like I could kind of focus on the characters a little bit more. I feel like a lot of the punch of seeing Jason Sudeikis play a completely evil character, like absolutely evil after mm-hmm. playing now seeing him after playing TV's maybe most lovable character in the 21st century. Yeah. After watching all of Ted Lasso and then going back and watch this movie, it's like, whew, he was typecast the exact opposite way. I've written my notes here. It's like finding out Mr. Rogers played a serial killer in a movie before he did his kid show. It's like, really? Why? Why was he cast like that? And I'm like, he's good. He's a good actor. But yeah, I believed him so much more as like the aw shucks, you know, jokey town bartender in the first half of the movie. And not like his form of the alcoholism didn't really play extremely well in the film. Anne Hathaway was a treat as always. So I'm giving this an 8 out of 10. I really did enjoy it. I think I boosted my score down a little bit, but it is a movie that is still enjoyable to watch multiple times. What about you, Miles?
Yeah. I mean, when I first watched, I think in terms of it being a film, I would have given it for personal enjoyment 8 out of 10. I think this is a really good movie despite all of its flaws, of which there are plenty. But I think the performances are strong. I think the idea is there. I do find this to be more of a Hallmark movie than a kaiju movie, and despite the fact that there are kaiju in it. I also do feel like, yeah, you do have to watch this movie kind of twice to really rein it in, because all of the marketing, like if you listen to this podcast and was like, oh yeah, I want to check that out, let's watch the trailer gives you a very different movie. Like the original trailer is... Maybe there's a different one online now, but the original trailer is very, very misleading. And that can really weight your experience with it. After second watch, yeah, I do think it is a deserving, it does deserve an 8. So I'm gonna keep my score at an 8, although just barely, because as a kaiju movie, I do think it suffers from not being a kaiju movie in a lot of ways. What did you think about the technical aspects? Because that's where I'm a little more harsher on.
I honestly think technically the movie is really good. Like it does have a solid script. It lures you in, both the trailer and kind of the beginning of the film, with being extremely normal, that you don't understand how magical realist the film is until, you know, more than halfway through it, and then it just goes out the window. Whereas I feel like a film like Being John Malkovich, one that they kind of quoted in the creation of this film, let you know the second you step through the movie theater doors that it was going to be a weird film, you know, top to bottom. Besides the ending being a little up for debate, I feel like the only thing I can really ding this film on technically is it did feel a little too long, like maybe 10 minutes. There had to be some scenes in here that could have been cut down a little bit, you know? There's just like a lot. Jason Sudeikis's turn evil happens like pretty early in the second act of the film. And it feels like something that should be hinted at, but like maybe push back, and like they walk back his evil or kind of irresponsible antics in that second act. But it feels too long because of that. But yeah, from the design of the monsters, the acting, the directing, I think this movie is pretty perfect in a lot of ways. And like I said, the score is great. But yeah, maybe 10 minutes too long. So I don't know what to cut. I'm not a director, but I'm giving it a 9 out of 10 because I do think it is like technically one of the better movies we have seen. I mean, this season, this century.
I don't know about that.
Well, I mean, since the year 2000, this technically has looked very good. And I mean, is there a movie with better
actors? There are movies we have given 10s.
True, but
since the year 2000. So let's calm down a little bit there, bud.
For different reasons, perhaps. But yeah, I think that's the best element of the movie is this is well produced, well directed, and well acted. What about you? You're feeling different.
Yeah, I'm feeling a little different. I think the special effects are on the higher side of cheap. Like, clearly they don't have much money, and they do a great job with what they have. I do think that the designs of the creatures are great. And I think both actors are phenomenal delivering the roles in which they're scripted to play. I have a big problem with the script. I do think it is extremely tonally inconsistent. I think there are some things that should have been spread out a little bit better. Like you had mentioned, the turn of Jason Sudeikis. I think that kind of haunts the movie. Mm-hmm. And not in a way that I think benefits the movie. And I think, yeah, putting it in a different spot, either really early so that you kind of... Or at least have hints, or to where he makes the full villain turn a little bit later in the film, I think would have helped benefit. I think it didn't know what kind of movie it wanted to be. And that's where I struggle, because the entire time I'm watching this movie, I'm kind of waiting for this movie to figure it out. And especially with the way the last scene plays, you're like, I don't know. And so for that main reason... Like the script, and I think if you've listened to this show since the beginning, you know that sometimes a script can make or break a movie for me. I'm going for a 7. No, I mean, not an awful score, but like it was enough to kind of distract me in what I would have wanted from the movie. It's certainly not a bad film. I think so much of this film works extremely well. And especially if you know what you're getting into, it is a very good movie. But I think it does even at that point still have some issues for me that I really wish they would have kind of let flesh out.
What about the importance of this film as a kaiju film, its evocative nature as a kaiju film? It sounded like you're also not super high on that.
I'm not giving this a 5 or nothing like that. I'm sticking with a 7 here. I think it is a good conversation piece. I think despite that, my suspicion that Nacho cares less about making like really a kaiju film than he does about the kind of the novelty of using kaiju. That aside, I think it's a very good, rare, solid American entry. And I may think it's super inconsistent, but it's definitely something for people to check out. And the idea of like, you know, hey, this person doesn't just like talk to a kaiju like in Gamera or have a emotional connection like in Gamera. This person literally controls a kaiju. And that's a really interesting thing that we don't see explored super often. And so I actually do think it does bring something new to the table in Kaiju Ega, despite to me not really specifically being Kaiju Ega. So I'm giving it a 7 because I do think it's a strong entry in that respect.
I just don't think we're ever going to see something anywhere near like this again. Not that, you know,
I agree.
Uniqueness is super important, but yeah, this movie was indeed kind of ignored by audiences, and I don't think it should. I'm glad we get to talk about it on this list because it is such a weird one-off little film. But yeah, we just don't get too many not mainline kaiju related things from Hollywood, not Godzilla related things from Hollywood, but we'll get a couple more in this season and some fun things like the Meg and Rampage. But this movie is just such a different breed from those kind of destruction movies. But yeah, I do feel like this is good for kaiju film. I feel like taking the trappings, even if it's kind of makes it a little kaiju related, but using it as a framework for storytelling was very fun. And yeah, I do wish more fans embraced it a little bit, but I feel like, yeah, this is probably more a movie that if you love Nacho Vigalondo, you will love this film. But if you're a Godzilla fan, this might not be here. This is a very different film. So I'm giving an 8 out of 10 for its importance. But yeah, I don't think it's unimportant. I just think it is one that folks may or may not love. Definitely worth trying if you have not seen Colossal. That's going to bring me to an 8, you to a 7. A little heavier on the weight there, which makes our podcast final an 8 out of 10. The average between our scores, which puts it at another film in kind of the great category. Like the worthwhile to watch movies are 8, 9, and 10 scores out there. And this qualifies, which is awesome. This is like 2 in a row, basically, because the last movie we did was Outer Man. I think we gave that an 8 out of 10 as well. Isn't that crazy, Miles? We're loving all these films. Right. So that is going to do it for us here. You can reach out to us to chat up all things kaiju at kaijuversushistory@gmail.com. If you want to email us, you can find us on social media at kaijuversushistory. On the Cosmic Crit Discord, we have a whole channel for Kaiju versus History, where we're mostly talking about news and fun things. I think the big thing that has happened recently was Godzilla in Fortnite, which I know nothing about except clips that we've watched. And
the recent announcement of the Godzilla Marvel crossovers.
Yes. Godzilla had done some DC action, Godzilla and Kong in DC, but now he's taking on the Marvel universe.
Yeah, we've got versus Fantastic Four and then versus Hulk coming out. Neither are really super appealing to me, but I'll probably check them out
makes more sense for Fantastic Four, to be honest. It's like I feel like they could take on that kind of threat.
Hulk, I'm just like, he fights Fing Fan Foom and stuff, who is a Godzilla ripoff. So like I don't really need that, but
yeah,
also I'm a massive Hulk guy anyway, so.
And last but not least, find our Letterboxd online where you can see our reviews in 5-star formats. Thanks, Miles. What are we doing next week?
All right. So next week, well, thank you, Patrick, and thank you,
listeners. Thank you.
Next week, we're going to check out our good friend, Minoru Kawasaki, who's back to his old tricks with another comedic look at kaiju attacking Tokyo. This time with a wrestling twist. That's right. Tune in next time for History versus Kaiju Mono.